A new independent report details the experiences of more than 1,200 kids in out-of-home care around the country. The good news is that the vast majority of children and young people surveyed feel safe and secure in their current living arrangements. The bad news is that states and territories are failing to meet many of the national standards that have been in place since 2011, and kids are still not being given any meaningful say in key decisions. Jackie Reed is the CEO of Create Foundation, which advocates on behalf of children and young people in care. Welcome back to RN Breakfast.
Thank you very much.
Now, there are nearly 46,000 Australian kids in care. This is a bit of a snapshot when you're talking about, what, nearly 1,300. But were you surprised that 93% of them expressed satisfaction and happiness with their current living arrangements?
Well, we were surprised because the figure's gone up from the last report, which was 2011, and we thought that figure at 83 or whatever percent it was at the time was really high, and this time it's about 90%.
So what does that tell us?
I think that foster carers are doing an amazing job, and I think that for the best part, that whilst they're in care, that seems to be the time that the kids are feeling happy and safe and secure. But I think the problem for us is that long-term trajectory and some of those areas around transition planning, cultural planning, those types of areas, which really impact on the kids when they leave care. So whilst they're in the care system, they seem to be reporting overwhelmingly that they're feeling safe and secure, which is an outstanding result.
We'll go into some of those issues in a moment. This report is a follow-up to a landmark study that Create Foundation commissioned in 2015. So this is 5 years on. The initial report was just a couple of years after the national standards were brought in. So what have you found? What are the key issues?
The key issues for us jump off the page because there is lots of unanimous agreement about what's going well. And even in some parts of the study, we have agreement with government about what's not going so well. Where there's large discrepancies is the areas that I sort of thought I'd focus on. So, for example, case planning is still a major issue. So for children to have a plan about what their future is, what's to happen around their contact, their sibling contact, their parental contact, all of the things that, you know, sit within a case plan.
So kids aren't getting a proper case plan, or they're not getting input into
Both. They're not getting a say generally into developing it, and they also don't have a case plan to even start.
That sounds extraordinary.
Yeah. After all these years, like, I mean, it's inexcusable. So I think the government figures may look differently at that because on some sort of government system or, you know, template or form, there might be a plan. The problem is that largely the kids are telling us overwhelmingly they haven't been developed, you know, haven't developed it with a person, and they're not aware of what's actually in it. So something like New South Wales, only 56% of kids reported that they had a plan and or knew that there was a plan. And Northern Territory is looking at 25%. So that's an astronomical, an indictment on a system that should be making sure that kids know what surrounds them as a plan for their future.
And these governments you're finding that there's no plan or that there's no sort of formed plans in place, are you having conversations with them? Are they acknowledging that this is an issue?
Look, I think that there's two things there. Firstly, that their figures show something different, so it's a very difficult conversation for us to have. So the angle that we take, and we have done since the first report some 5 years ago, is go back to them and say, if a child doesn't know there's a plan and hasn't been engaged in developing it, you've got a problem. Mm. Because a system has a plan somewhere for the child is not in of itself enough. So you need to look at the engagement of children and young people in that process. So that's the angle that we've taken with our advocacy.
Now, something like 40% of children and young people in care are Indigenous, and of course there has been a great deal of focus in recent years on the need to maintain cultural and kinship ties. What did you find in the survey? Has there been improvements?
No. That was particularly disturbing. Something like one third of children that were Indigenous in our study did not feel connected at all to their culture. And then one third also felt connected. So one third of kids, you know, were happy and felt connected to their culture. One third of kids disappeared off the radar and didn't form an opinion about it. They were ambivalent. So I think that that's a real indictment on what we're doing. And cultural support planning is a really big part of that. So when we look at cultural support planning, we would have thought after all these years, we've had Stolen Generations, we've had Royal Commissions, we've had all kinds of spotlight on this issue, and we still see such low numbers of kids that are Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander with a plan, which is, there's no excuse. We've just got to get
better at it. Where does the fault lie here? Is that with the caseworkers?
Look, I'd say that for us, it's about unpacking what that is. Like, no caseworker goes to work every day thinking they're not going to do the right thing, and they know that they should have a plan for these kids, and they know that the cultural support plans are important. I'd suggest that it's because of a lack of resources and probably a lack of training. So
there's a huge amount of churn amongst caseworkers, isn't there?
Yeah. And look, it's a very high pressure job. It's the job at the coal face. You know, we've seen some of the practice manuals for these workers, and they're a foot deep with all the rules and regulations and things they should be doing. And when you've got such large caseloads, it's just not physically possible. And because there's such a big churn, you get somebody new coming in, you've got to start at the beginning, looking at you've got to familiarise yourself with the cases, and then, you know, they move on as well. So I think that the workforce capacity issue is a big one.
One of the other big issues that children have identified in the past is the number of placements that they have, you know, and some of them have had to endure. I think they talk about it as being surviving care. They go from home to home. And I know that Victoria in recent years is one state that's legislated to try to deal with this. Has that made a difference? Does that show up?
No. It's a shame, but it doesn't. There's lots of good intentions in this space. But however, we were quite pleasantly surprised that we in our stability, the way that we worked at stability, we sort of said the low number of placements coupled with the length of time they were in care. So that's the way CREATES interpreted this. So we saw Tasmania with something like 63% of kids have between one and two placements. So that's actually a great statistic in the sense of we thought it would be much higher, because last time I think it was 9 years, nine placements in 9 years was kind of the average, whereas now we're looking at, you know, quite a different situation. New South Wales was also really improved in that space. Like, those were the two standout states. So that was something that we thought was a general improvement across the board, but there's still a long way to go. States like the ACT had only 39%. Stability with one to two placements. So there's still a lot of work to be done for them.
You mentioned transition a little earlier. We know that children in care often struggle when they turn 18 and have to fend for themselves. There's also been a push to try to deal with the transition arrangements. Is that happening?
This is an area CREATES been in since, 2008, I think, was our first report on transition. And it's been an area, really pushed through COAG, through the national framework. It's been something that's been really highlighted. We would have expected to see a much better result here. In fact, it's a bit soul destroying. Lots of good work happening. I think what we're not great at is measuring the impact of a lot of this activity and looking at what works and what doesn't work. We're still seeing that for 17-year-olds, not 15 to 17-year-olds, just the 17-year-old cohort, that there's only 40% of, on average, of children that actually have a leaving care plan. And I think that's what sets them up for their future. That's the trajectory.
And what does it involve when you're talking about a leaving care plan? Why is it important?
Well, it's important because it's like when our kids leave home, you look at their rental situation, where are they going to live? What are their educational needs post that care? Because some of these kids turn 18 in the last year of school as they're exiting the care system. They're actually still at school. So some states are starting to be quite proactive. In Queensland recently, they extended the care age so that they could stay at school for those last few months of the year and not have to leave care. So the care plan also picks up things like their mental health issues moving forward, if there are counselling needs that need to continue into the future, training, not just education, if they're going to go into some sort of voc ed. So, and that they're also supposed to plan for contingencies, for things when they go wrong, what the support networks that sit around those children and young people. At the moment, there's a real reliance on foster carers, and foster carers are saying loud and clear that they would like to keep those kids in their care for, you know, a longer period of time. So we're seeing the Home Stretch campaign just trying to get some traction there where the kids can stay in those placements. And I think that will make the world of difference.
Well, there's certainly a lot of work to be done in this space. Thank you for coming in today.
You're welcome.
Jackie Reed is the CEO of Create Foundation, which advocates on behalf of children and young people in out-of-home care. They're releasing a report today. In the words of those children,